Cape Talk. Food.
Now, confession time. I make a valiant effort at my kids' birthday cakes, but I am no master baker, to put it mildly, which is why I live in awe of the contestants on shows like The Great British Bake Off, who manage to deliver cakes that apparently taste good as well as looking like design masterpieces. And I know many of you are big fans of the show and will have enjoyed watching several series already. One of you has just contacted me now, Leo, on the WhatsApp line, saying, I'm a huge fan of Nadia Hussain's programs. She is so natural and down to earth, and a welcome change from celebrity chefs that we see flouncing around on our TV shows. Well, Leo is of course referencing Nadia Hussain, who was declared the winner of the 2015 season of The Great British Bake Off, and boy, her star has risen since then. She's had several of her own TV series, she's published several different cookbooks, a novel, a children's book, she's even had a royal appointment. And she's in South Africa at the moment to help launch her new two-part series called Nadia's Asian Odyssey, which starts airing on the BBC Lifestyle Channel, which is number 174, from this Wednesday, the 29th of May. I had the chance to have a conversation with her last week. Let's take a listen. Nadia, welcome to South Africa, and great to have you with us on Cape Talk. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for talking to me.
Let's start a little bit with your own background for the sake of listeners who might not have followed the story from your early days on The Great British Bake Off. You were born and raised in the UK, but I understand your heritage is actually Bangladeshi.
Yes, so I was born in the UK, in England, and my parents, I'm first generation British, and my parents are actually from Bangladesh. Yeah.
Okay. Now, what did that mean for you in terms of the kind of food and flavors that you grew up with? Because I believe your father is actually a chef himself and a restaurant owner.
Yes, I was really lucky because being British, you know, when I was at school, I was exposed to lovely food at school, which to me was British food because it was such a stark contrast from the food that I was eating at home. And Bangladeshi cooking is lots of fresh fish, lots of fruit, and rice is our staple. So it was like two different worlds for me completely. So yes, I was really lucky in that I was raised with two very different cuisines, which of course affected the way I cook now. But I was lucky because my mom is an amazing, amazing home cook. But my dad, he ran restaurants his whole life. And he ran them, and he was front of house, back of house, kitchen, you name it. He did everything.
So you had a really, as you say, diverse exposure. The thing that really made me giggle doing some research for this interview, Nadia, I mean, you are renowned for your baking skills. Is it true that your mom never baked and literally used your oven for storage in the kitchen?
Yes, yes, that is that. You read right. my kids, it's really funny because my mum, when I went to school and I baked a cake, I looked at my teacher like she was insane. And she turned on the oven. I was like, what is she doing? That's for storage. So to me, it looked like the teacher had lost her mind. And then I went home and I took everything out of the oven and I said, Mum, you're not supposed to put frying pans in there. You're meant to make cakes in there. And she was like, no. And she stuffed everything back in. She never uses her oven. She has one, but she doesn't use it. And she still, to this day, uses it for trays and pots and pans.
That's really funny. Let's talk a little bit about the early food memories. You've mentioned your own traditional cuisine being all about the fresh fish and rice as your staple. Can you talk to us about some of the dishes that you associate with childhood that make you think of home?
Well, I think for me, it's it was always Bangladeshi food, you know, and my mum didn't cook anything else. It was always that. But there was this one thing that we looked forward to every Eid. My mum would make a chicken korma, and it's got so few ingredients. And not like the kind of chicken korma that you'd eat in a restaurant, you know, the westernized kind of, the westernized version of a korma. It's simple ingredients, ginger, garlic, whole spices, and then it's cooked low and slow, and then you add lots of clarified butter to it. And then the joy of cooking something like that is you cook it, and then you put it away in the fridge for 2 days, and then the flavors enhance over 2 days, and then you eat it. And it's just that smell when my mum's cooking it on, when she's heating it up on Eid day, you can smell it. It comes up in such a lovely fragrant, it's not a harsh smell, it's just, and to me that's home every year. Like that's what my mum cooks and that's what we eat.
Oh, you've got my stomach rumbling in the background here. Sounds delicious. What made you decide to enter the Great British Bake Off? Did you already have your eyes set on a career in food, or was it something you did on a whim? How did it come about?
Absolutely not. I mean, there was never a plan. I entered the Bake Off because my husband did it for me, and he only did it because I suffered with panic disorder and I suffered with anxiety. And there was a time, I think it came to a point in our life, in our marriage, where he just said, there's something not quite right. You know, you're just not the same person anymore. And so he's the one who did the application. And I literally did it to humor him. I said, look, I'm never going to get in. Nothing's going to, you know, I'm never going to get on the show. And I got on. And honestly, it has changed my life. I certainly didn't go in for a career. I went in because I think it needed to be done, because my anxiety was at an all-time high and I was really struggling to kind of function day to day. And of course, now I'm doing a job that's very high pressure. And so it doesn't always help my anxiety. But what it does do is it allows me to kind of push the boundaries and allows me to do things that frighten me, which means that I'm always testing my anxiety. And I'm always learning every single day how to control it and how to have it. I'm learning every day how to manage it. So I certainly didn't set out for a career. It was just a very fantastic, wonderful byproduct of winning the show.
It's an amazing story, because you'd imagine finding yourself in front of a camera, one of the most stressful things I can think of doing. And did your panic disorder ever at any point impact on your performance in the show, or were you able to as you said, focus in and push those boundaries and challenge yourself and work through it?
I'd be lying if I said that I didn't have panic attacks and I didn't struggle. I did. You know, I was having more panic attacks in those 10 weeks of filming than I'd ever had in my life. So it would be a complete lie to say that I wasn't struggling, because I was. It wasn't easy at all. But in that time, you know, I kind of focused myself and said, look, you've just got to focus yourself on baking. And I constantly reminded myself every time I was having a bad moment and having, you know, when I was close to a panic attack, I had to remind myself why I bake in the first place. And I bake because I have anxiety, and I baked because, you know, it helped me to focus my mind on something else. So when I had those moments of kind of when I was really clouded and not sure why I was doing it, and in those moments when I thought I was going to fail, I would just concentrate on baking, and that would just allow me to relax. So it's a weird double-edged sword. It caused me anxiety, yet in the same breath I was baking, and it was helping to relieve it as well. So, I mean, I don't know if that even makes sense, but it does to me.
It does, it does. I'm just also hugely aware of the fact that as your popularity on the show grew and your profile grew, I mean, you had the fans, the Nardiators, I think they called them. Yes. I believe you had the Prime Minister rooting for you at one point. This surge of public support behind you must have been incredibly gratifying and supportive in that process. But I know that that kind of surge usually comes with the opposite, that there are nasty people out there who will criticize. Is that something you had to learn to deal with as well?
Yeah, I mean, the while I was doing Bake Off, the love was incredible, and I was so shocked and humbled by it all. I didn't expect any support from anyone, and you know, just to have all that support, it did really help in kind of telling myself that you can do this, you're going to be just fine. But like you said, it's with the good comes the bad, and the bad is the fact that social media means that you are open to criticism, and you are, it's like an open forum for anyone to say whatever they want, unfiltered, uncensored. And of course there is that, and there are moments when I have the thinnest skin and I can't cope with any of the comments, and there are moments where I can cope and I have the thickest skin and I can take it. But sometimes I'm so shocked by some of the things people say, but I always tell myself, you know, they are outweighed by the good. You know, there are far better, there are nicer comments than there are negative. So I try not to think about them too much. And the best thing is to give yourself I give myself a social media detox. I'm not doing any of that. It's not necessary. So I just come away from it.
Now, I read a comment, and I'm going to have to paraphrase here because I can't remember the precise quote, but somebody in government actually acknowledged that the role you had played in shifting stereotypes about the Muslim community and in building bridges and encouraging an appreciation of diversity had been more effective than any government policy over the last 10 years. I think it was something to that effect. How did you feel about that role? That, I mean, you didn't go in probably looking for, but you emerged from the show and your subsequent career playing a role as kind of a symbolic person for your community and a builder of bridges. Does that make you proud? Does it scare you a little bit? How do you feel about that?
I certainly didn't expect it. That was a bit of a shock, you know, just to read something like that. And just, I that was a massive shock, I've got to say. And I was a little bit lost for words in that moment. But, you know, if you'd asked me that question 3.5 years ago, I would have said, you know, look, I just want to bake. I just want to cook. And I don't want to talk about my religion or about being a daughter of an immigrant or being a Muslim. I don't want to talk about any of that. But, you know, now, nearly four years later, I understand the importance of doing what I do because, you know, growing up, I didn't see a Muslim woman on television. I didn't read stories about Muslim girls. I, there's nobody on television, book, in the media. You know, there was no one that I could relate to. But I know now, having spoken to hundreds of people, that, you know, the where I am right now is important, and there's a reason why I'm doing it, and it's much more, it's greater than just cooking and baking. And I've got children of my own, and now they get to see mummy, not just mummy, a Muslim woman, you know, a woman of color, a daughter of an immigrant who is out there and saying that, look, I can do this, which means any of us can do it. So for me, it's a far bigger message than just cooking and baking. As much as I love cooking and baking, it's bigger than that. So I understand the importance of it, and I understand the importance of staying in the role that I am right now. So every time I'm deterred or I'm worried that I don't fit in or I don't belong, I remind myself, no, there's a reason why you're doing this. You have to stay. And that's why I do it every single day.
Now, you do an awful lot because, gosh, how your life has changed since the win on the Great British Bake Off. There have been TV series, there have been books. Your children's book was shortlisted for the Children's Book of the Year Award, Bake Me a Story. Tell us a little bit about that book.
Bake Me a Story?
Mm.
Yeah, that was a different... By then, I'd written a couple of cookbooks, and it was... To write Bake Me a Story was a different thing altogether because I was taking traditional fairy tales and turning them into twists, because fairy tales are a little bit grim and a little bit dark, I've got to say. And I was thinking to myself, there's a reason why our children are having nightmares, because we're reading them horrific stories at night. So I changed those stories around and made them something a little bit more accessible for kids nowadays. Mm-hmm. And along with each story, there was a recipe to go with it. And it just makes cooking slightly more interactive. And that's what I loved about writing those books, because you go from reading a story to creating a story. So you bring that story to life. And it's just an incredible way of cooking and storytelling at the same time and doing something interactive, because we are so time poor. And as parents, even I know I struggle sometimes. I find myself at the end of the week realizing that I probably haven't even made eye contact with my children. And it's a really good way of just sitting down and saying, right, this is the story we're going to read and this is the recipe we're going to make. And it just gives parents a moment just to say, let's do something together. So I'm very proud of those books.
Yeah. You must also have been incredibly proud to receive the call inviting you to please bake a cake for the Queen's 90th birthday. How did that moment feel? Can you describe it?
That had to be probably the most surreal moment, because I did think it was a hoax. I did. I remember getting the emails saying, no, this can't be real. And I very nearly said, no way, I am not doing that. But I'm glad I did. And it was, you know, and the hardest thing was that there was no brief, there was no guideline. Nobody said that I could or couldn't do anything in particular. So I was kind of left in the dark a little bit. So I was free to be as creative as I wanted. And it was wonderful.
What did you actually make for her in the end?
I made her, well, I couldn't work out what to make, and I was told that I'm not allowed to make a fruitcake, because a couple of years before, somebody had made her a fruitcake, and she couldn't cut into it because it was too stiff. So they said, no, please no fruitcake, so I didn't do any fruitcake. But I'd done lemon drizzles for Mary Berry in the final of Bake Off, so I thought, well, if lemon drizzle is good enough for Mary, then I think an orange drizzle is good enough for the Queen. So that's what I did.
Did you get any feedback from the Queen or anyone from her team as to whether she liked it?
Well, no. Rumour has it that she did take the top tier home. Like, nobody's ever seen the Queen eat cake, so I don't know that she ate it. But I heard that she took the top tier home, and in my head I have this image that she put on the fire, put her slippers on, watching EastEnders, and she had a nice slice of cake with a cup of tea. That's the image I'm going to go with.
Oh, totally hold on to that. I absolutely love it. Now, besides all the cooking, and there's been lots on TV we still need to talk about, you released a novel in 2017. You've designed your own homeware range. You're regularly appearing on other people's TV shows as well as your own. And as you've already told us, you're still a wife and mom to three children. That is, extraordinarily busy. Any tips for the moms listening today who have to juggle work and family about how you manage to fit it all in?
I mean, it's, you know what, I think we all work really, really hard, and I think we mustn't take away from the fact that we, you know, whatever our lifestyle and whatever we're doing, we, you know, we all work hard to maintain some sort of a balance. It's safe to say that I've dropped my standards. I don't clean up as much as I used to. So the thing is with me, you know, with the kids, I always tell them, look, guys, we all live in this house together. You know, we're not going to get a cleaner. We've all got to clean this house. We all live in it. So the trick is to get the kids to do all the work. That's what I do.
All right. I'm going to take that one home myself. Thank you for the advice. Now, the reason you're in South Africa is to help launch your new show, Nadia's Asian Odyssey. So for those listening who want to look out for it, it's going to be airing from this Wednesday, the 29th of May on BBC Lifestyle, which is channel 174 on the DSTV network. Nadia, tell us a little bit about the show.
So I did a DNA test, and I was just curious about where my family was from, because I know that we're from Bangladesh, and I just thought if I do a DNA test, maybe I could get something a little bit more in depth. And I found out that my family are from Cambodia, from Thailand, and from Nepal, which was a massive, massive shock. And with that, I decided, right, I'm going to travel and I'm going to meet the people out there, and I'm going to learn about the food and eat the food and just get on my hands and knees and just enjoy that experience. And I'm so proud of it, because, you know, there are many, many people who, like me, are children of immigrants who don't really have a history or don't really know where their family are from. So for anyone watching who is a child of an immigrant or doesn't have any history, I hope it really encourages them to try and find out more about themselves, because it's really answered lots of questions for me and kind of almost closed some doors too, mm-hmm. because I kind of have some questions have been answered. I know some never will, but I can proudly say that my family are from those countries.
Okay.
And it's definitely the way I cook, because I always look at Nepalese food and say, yeah, that's how we cook. Or I cook Thai food and I say, that's how we cook.
Interesting. I know sort of at the heart of your philosophy on food, there's always been a sense of it's not just about the food that's going on the table, but how you are sharing it with others. Is that theme of the family gathering around the table to eat together one that weaves into this series as well?
So, I mean, at the very beginning, you see I'm there with my own family, and they're, you know, we're having a meal together talking about our food. And for me, eating together is one of the most important things, and we mustn't take that for granted. And I think we live such busy lives and we're so time poor that sometimes we forget that sometimes it's really important to stop, eat together and make eye contact and talk to each other. And we do forget, and I do as well. By traveling to these countries, you know, I see that there's this love for family that, you know, it so resonates with me so much, because that's what my family are like. It's all about sitting together and eating together, and that is well, you know, that's time well spent. And I think we don't do it enough as a country, we don't do it enough. And I always encourage that and say, guys, let's sit together. We should sit together and eat. So that's something we try to do in our home all the time.
Well, speaking of time well spent, Nadia, thank you so much for making time for us today. It certainly has been well spent hearing your remarkable story, and we're so looking forward to watching the new show. Final question is, what's next for you?
I'm still filming. I'm doing lots of other things. I'm filming. Back in the UK, we've just watched a documentary about me and my anxiety. So I'm really hopeful that BBC Lifestyle get to watch that documentary. The hope is that I just keep doing this and creating a space for other women, women of color, Muslims, anyone who feels that they can't do it. I hope that the longer I do this, the more space we create for others to come up and do the same.
Nadia Hussain, thank you so much for chatting to us today. Lovely to have you on the show.